This is the SEN Breakfast Monday Microscope with Gary Lyon, Tim Watson and Kane Corns.
Hi, one of the true workers, Kane Corns, still going like we are. I hope you're on time and a half today, Kano. How are you, mate?
What are you two doing on a public
holiday?
Because
we love our audience. Yeah. We want to keep giving.
That's the biggest question out of the round of 49. No, but it was... Tim, I was unhappy with the break in the fixture and the what was in front of us until it happened. So what a surprise it was. On paper, it looked like perhaps the worst fixture we've seen in a long time. Then we get that classic between North Melbourne and Giants. Who would have thought Adelaide and St Kilda was a thriller? And then last night was just one of the great home and away games that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, indeed. And I'm a massive advocate for 666 as a result of what I saw on the weekend again. I think whoever thought of that was a genius, because you wouldn't have got those results. If you imagine that game last night, you imagine the North Melbourne, they would have just parked 15 bikes behind the footy North Melbourne after they
Absolutely.
Kicked the first two, and you wouldn't have got that. So well done to 666. Let's start with David Mackay. We haven't spoken a second about it this morning. We waited till you got to us. It's gone straight to the tribunal, so that in itself tells us a few things, but I haven't heard you talk about it, so what are your thoughts?
Well, Saturday night, start late and do the show on the AFL, and first crack at it just because that was the way that it sits, and I said, I wouldn't be surprised if it's none, I wouldn't be surprised if it's three, and that's the biggest issue that we face with tribunal matters at the moment, and I'm not surprise, but my question is, what's he charged with? So he goes to the tribunal tonight. They say to him, how do you plead? And he says, well, I don't plead anything because I haven't been charged with anything. It's confusing. And I had a bit of an argument on social media with David King. Not an argument. King is really passionate about this and I respect his view on it. But how far do we go in eradicating some things that we love about this game? And Gaz, you said it was alarmist nonsense when I said, well, you're going to start taking the high knee to the jaw out and accidental contact there. This is my fear. This is where we're going. I saw it as two players attacking the footy and everything we love about the game. The result is unfortunate and absolutely our thoughts with the result. But I'm just concerned we're losing the things that we love about the game.
I want to have a listen to what David, haven't heard it, so let's have a listen to what David King had to say.
I'm looking at the health and well-being of the players long term. We've got so many players on the sidelines now with their lives being altered significantly at 21, 22 years of age. For me, you can highlight the point of contact if you like. You can look at all the stills you like. It's not about still photos. This is about decision making in the path here for Mackay. At that speed, significant contact is highly likely in that evidence when he's coming in flat speed like that. I just think we need to coach that out of players. We need to suspend that out of the game. And I'm comfortable with this being 3 or 4.
So you know he doesn't want him going at speed.
This is the confusion for. So we ask the players to play the toughest game in the world, and now we're saying when they don't attack the footy, you'll get up there, Gaz, on Monday and have a look at some players that could have attacked it hard, as we all would do. And now we're asking the players to slow down in a split second when the footy is there to be won. I just think we're making it impossible for our players, making it really difficult.
Was this a cop-out, do you think? Either of you, do you think this is a cop-out by the match review panel yesterday? Because on that match review panel is Steve Hocking, right, who is the representative of the AFL.
Is he on the panel?
Well, he has to tick anything that happens at the match review. He actually has to tick it off or on, right? So he is the person who represents the game. So what they said yesterday is that they don't know where this actually sits. They are unsure. So now they're actually sending it to the tribunal, which consists of intelligent men, three former players of the game, but they're asking them to adjudicate whether or not this bump that we saw at the weekend or this collision we saw at the weekend is inside the rules of the game.
Yeah, that's...
So if somebody breaks their jaw, okay, if somebody in the act, if it's deemed to have been outside the rules of the game and what's acceptable at a game, and somebody ends up with a broken jaw, like we saw on Saturday night, then that's not a 2 or 3 week penalty. That's got to be a 6 or 8 week penalty.
I'm watching it over and over and over as we are talking here, gentlemen. And for me, game on.
Play on.
Play on.
You're saying play on.
Play on.
Kane's saying play on, yeah?
I'm saying play on. But I also, and I'm acknowledging the head high. I just, when the ball's in dispute like that, I think, Kane, in answer to your earlier question, there will be times when players need to slow up. And we as a broader footy community and media need to acknowledge and see that and say, well, that's not a player who's taking a short step or not going hard enough. That's a player who's cognizant of the rules and where it is for ahead. I think in this instance, the ball's still there to be won.
Yeah.
And you can't say don't go fast when the ball's in dispute.
Yeah, we take David McKay. Like he's one of the fairest players.
Yeah, I don't think there's any thought that he was trying to knock him out.
There's no intent there, and he's got his hands on the ball. So I was upset about the Ploughman one 2 weeks ago because I thought it was a fair contest without intent, and he got 2 weeks for what I saw as a great footy collision. I understand the result of it, but then on the weekend I see O'Meara bump Hayward. Hayward goes down with concussion. Nothing to see. This is where I'm confused. Is it zero? Is it none? Do you get off like O'Meara got off? I don't know. I thought what Taylor Walker did on Wilkie was it with in that marking contest had far more intent.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
Cause for and hurt than what David McKay did.
So I didn't like Ben King either, who was in the same sort of area. Both those boys. So you talk about being not caring about getting a week. It wouldn't worry me if they got a week for that.
There are, I understand what King is saying, okay, in terms of, you know, players that have been forced out of the game because of head trauma and then those that are suffering later in life because of it. But there are, in this game, there are inherent dangers associated with playing our game of collision sport, okay? And we can do all we can to make sure that we protect players as much as we possibly can by the framing of the rules of the game. But there will always be instances like that one on Saturday night where two players are fiercely contesting the ball, and as a result of that, somebody comes away injured.
Can't legislate out of the game forever, I don't think. But we'll move on because otherwise we'll be here until 7:30 still going about the same thing. Biggest result of the weekend, West Coast. What category have you got West Coast in? 22 points down halfway through the last quarter. The Richmond lovers are going nuts. Kingy says it's brilliant, powerful, it's important, it's impossible to stop. Well, it was because they had 22 points down halfway through the last quarter.
Oh, when your star players stand up and the last quarters of Nat Nui, Hearn, Yo and Kennedy, by extension for the full game, he's just an out-and-out superstar. I'm happy to call him a superstar, Josh Kennedy. I love everything about him. When they stand up like they did, they're a force and you get potentially Shuey back and others, but we'll speak a bit. Can you trust them away from home? And if they don't finish top two, can they win this premiership? I don't think they can. They have to finish top two, which is almost going to be impossible from the position that they're in. But Nat Nui to Yo in the last quarter, three in a row from the centre bounce, which led to the 6-6-6, which you're talking about, Gaz, was just magnificent.
Your trust in West Coast goes up when Elliot Yo plays. That's the bottom line. Elliot Yo is a barometer for this side because he brings a hardness and I'm not saying they're not hard as a group, but he brings an extra hardness. He brings an accountability as a midfielder. He can also go with a player. And he had this osteitis. He took 2 weeks to get motoring and then he motored last night. He changes them.
And they have to find a way to be able to play Nat Nui for longer. So they even stretched it last night. He's been around 64% game time. They are a different team when Nat Nui is on the ground. So he stretched it to 72% last night. Why have we got a player as seasoned as Nat Nui only capable of playing 72% game time? They've got to be more capable of putting him forward, letting him do the forward ruck work, leaving him on the ground. They're a different team, and that was the case again last night. He played 72%. He's got to get that to 86, 87%.
You're saying, though, that they need to play him differently and send him forward as opposed to he just doesn't have the endurance to be able to go for much longer in the ruck. So I guess they think that he's more benefit to them not as that forward but in the ruck. So that's why they spell him and then put him back on the ball, though, Kane. Isn't it right? Isn't that the way they – I mean, they've worked this out over time, have they not?
Well, possibly, but I think if they're going to win it, he needs to play 86, 80% game time. Now, whether that's go behind the ball for a spell, get your break in different ways, because sometimes you get stuck on the interchange bench. The ball's on the other side. You can't get back on. Whereas if he's on the ground, it's a straight swap. Yeah, I'm into the ruck now. I just think I'm watching them and I see Oscar Allen in there. What's Oscar Allen doing in the ruck? Like, what are you doing with your marquee, genuine next superstar of the team playing ruck?
Haven't they got replacements all over the ground though currently though, haven't they? Edwards down back is going to fill one of those key positions. The other Edwards played at the weekend. He was really good. Foley was good. So they've actually got some real talent beneath where we well, below their first sort of rung of players at the moment that they're developing. And the fact that they've had some injuries has meant that they've been able to expose them to the pressure of the game too. Talking about the pressure, Stuart Dew, what sort of pressure is he under and what sort of pressure should he be under right now after that loss again at the weekend?
A lot. So, you know, I spoke about this on Friday. Tom Morris did a thing, which coaches are out of contract at the end of 2022. He's one of them. He with David Teague would be the most nervous. I just don't like the way that these young players are being coached, and they're being allowed to get away with defensive actions that just don't stand up. And because they're off Broadway a little bit, we don't tend to focus on them as much. But when you're the only game on a Saturday and it starts at 4:30 and we're all watching, we quickly notice the defensive actions of Jack Lukosius and Isaac Rankin and others. And I just don't want to nail those two because they're the, you know, pick two and three in a draft from a few years ago. They've now played 50 games. They're not being coached hard enough, Gaz.
Are they moving ahead, Gary, quickly enough?
No, I've seen them live a few times. They are moments where I think they are taking a step forward, but then you watch on the weekend, nine players don't lay a tackle in the first half. Nine. And four laid one. So you've got 13 players have laid one or less tackles in a half a footy.
What's that about then?
Well, that's mindset.
And effort, isn't it?
Well, I don't reckon the coach says don't go out and don't tackle.
No, I know. A coach doesn't say that. Mm. A coach doesn't say that. But you, as a coach, you have to take the responsibility of getting your team into the right frame of mind to compete.
I think Stuart,
that's what coaches have to do.
They do. And Stuart Dew takes that, and he takes that responsibility. I don't think he hides from it. I've had a couple of good discussions with Stuart, you know, when we go down the rooms beforehand and talk to them. So I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's just, I don't know, it's an environment thing maybe. Getting, as Kane says, get away, off Broadway.
But this is what we do. We put everyone else under pressure and then we just disregard what the Suns are doing.
Why
is that?
We do, because
we just don't care enough, do we?
Well, no, that's right. No one's invested enough in the Gold Coast Suns emotionally. And who's invested unless you're a...
Is that part of the problem then?
Unless you're Tony Cochran.
Yeah, Tony is. and the AFL are. But the rest of us don't care, that don't get passionate about it enough. I mean, you watch the Heat come for St Kilda by comparison.
100%.
And rightfully so.
And the pressure's been on Carlton, the pressure's been on Collingwood.
So St Kilda lead going into the last quarter, and then the last quarter the Crows have 12 more clearances, 15 more inside 50s, 21. If you lose contested possession by 10 or plus in a game...
They're out in their feet, St Kilda.
You've got an issue.
They're out in their feet, which begs the question also about their... I know they've got some injuries. Okay, yeah. They've got a lot of injuries right now. But I wonder about their conditioning too as a group of players.
Well, all of that. And that's why the review situation comes up about, you know, you've got to look at that. So injuries come into your high performance. They were out on their feet.
Dougal
Howard, he could not go. He couldn't go against an eight gamer in Riley Filthorpe. This is Dougal Howard. So what is going on there? They stopped. I looked at some numbers from St Kilda and where they stack up. They're 16th in so many key areas, including scores against off turnover, including stoppage goals. They're 16th in the competition for that. They're 15th for contested footy, and with the group that they've got inside, it's alarming for the Saints. You shouldn't lose from 36-0 against the youngest team in the competition.
Ben Reid, he would have played in a fair few of these, I reckon, the Freeze and NB games. 152 games for the Pies, a member of the Premiership 2010, and All-Australian in 2011. He's gone back to Wang. He's playing in the O&M League. He kicked six on the weekend. He's been good enough to join us. Okay, Benny.
Morning, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, good to talk to you. How was it running around for, was it Wang Rovers or just Wang?
Wang Magpies, mate. I stayed in the black and white.
Right.
And it was good fun. The boys say, well, we had a good win over in Lavington. We, Murray moved all the games to New South Wales this week so we could get some crowds in. So, it was good fun.
What's the standard like? Evans and Murray's always been a strong and powerful country footy league.
Yeah, it is. It is a strong league still. There's a lot of... I suppose even guys just come out of the league. Anthony Miles, who was at Gold Coast and Richmond, he's playing at Albury. Big Dawes Simpson's playing at Myrtleford. Cal Moore, who was on Carlton and Richard's list, playing with us as well. So there's some good players there running around.
Hey, good morning, Ben. Before we talk about Bucks and the time that he coached you and your views about that, were you surprised by the decision last week?
Yeah, I was probably caught off guard as much as anyone was. I thought, you know, they had a good win last week, which is great, and get back on the winners list. And then to come out when it did, I was a bit shocked. But I suppose at the end of the day, it's, um, it, the club's got a breathing room now, and the players don't have to answer the same old questions I do every other day of the week that I have been.
You had a good view of his coaching style, the Nathan Buckley that started, the Nathan Buckley towards the end of it all, the successes along the way. How much did he change from the original coaching style that he had to what he developed into over that period of time?
I think he changed a lot. He sort of came from that guy who, he probably expected everybody to be this certain way when they played, and the game style probably revolved around that a little bit. And then I think as he got on, got older and got a bit more sort of experience in the job, he worked out that all players have different strengths and to play to those. And I think that sort of started towards the end of 2017. And then 18-19 was a pretty good year. It was grand final, prelim, a kick away from basically a flag. So he learned a lot as he got going. And I still think, I don't think he'll be lost the footy, that's for sure. I think he'll be back in there at some point.
What do you think he learnt along the way? Was it man management skills? Do you think that changed in the way that he was able to interact with players?
Yeah, I think that's a massive one. I mean, everyone talks about the care and empathy and that sort of thing that Collingwood have sort of tried to bring into the culture down there. And that's one of the things that stood out the most is a lot more care. I mean, he was caring, but he's probably just been able to interact with the players a bit more, build those relationships better than what he maybe previously had, and that obviously gets the players on your side. And as you know, a lot of us know, if the coach shows genuine interest in you, you tend to want to play some better footy as well.
Well, do you think that Nathan will coach again?
I know he loves his footy, so I wouldn't be surprised at all if he comes back into it. I think he said he wants to go away for a little while, and I suppose spend a bit of time with his family and go from there. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he stepped inside of and had another coaching role next year, or he jumped straight back in the media or whatever. I think, whatever he wants to do, he can do. So, good luck to him. And, I think he should be really proud of what he's done.
There's been a lot of discussion, and it's really taken place in the last week because of how Bucks came to be the coach, that succession plan, the handover between Mick and Nathan Buckley. Can you recall how you felt about that? Was it seamless for you as a player at the time?
It was a long time ago. It probably was pretty famous. I was still pretty young then, 22 or something like that I was. So as a young player, it's probably one of those things that once it happens, you sort of roll with it. Whereas if you were a bit older back then, I had 4 or 5 years with Mick, a great relationship, but some guys would have been with Mick for 10 or 12 years, and that probably would have been harder for them. So it's one of those ones. I was probably being a younger player, as I said, it just rolled over into another coach, whereas other guys it might have been a bit harder for them.
There was a lot of players that got moved on sort of around that time. Did you sense that there was some sort of dislocation in the dressing room in that group of players at that time?
Not so much, to be honest. As I said, I was young, and when you're young and naive, you just enjoy playing, being down there playing AFL footy and go to the week-to-week stuff. You probably don't take too much notice of all the other stuff that's going on in the background. And that's basically where I was at. I mean, I didn't see too much going on. There was probably, it might have been some things going on that I wasn't aware of. But, I mean, it all moves on pretty quick in AFL footy. 1 year, someone's there, and then they're not. And the club just moves forward, which I think will happen now as well.
What are you doing now, Benny?
What am I doing? I'm doing a bit of work with the Murray Bush Rangers and coaching with them on a Wednesday. A bit of PT work around Wangaratta, and my wife opened up a Pilates yoga studio here in Bright, which she's moved to. So we're doing a bit of work in there too. So it's been good, mate. Back up to God's country and enjoying it.
They say Bright's one of the most beautiful places in the world. Is that where you're living in Bright?
Yeah, in Bright, just outside of Bright, about 10k out from on a bit of acreage. So
how much? How many acres?
That's 30 acres, so it's nice bit of land on the hill there below Mount Buffalo. So it's we're enjoying it. It's been a lot different than the city was, that's for sure. So it's been good.
You got a tractor?
No, I haven't got a tractor. I've only got about probably 5 or 6 acres of clear paddock. The rest is basically bushland around me. So
disappointing. You got got a chainsaw?
I've got a chainsaw. That's about it.
What sort?
Husky.
Oh, Husky. Yeah.
We're still men,
yeah. You're still men, are you?
Yeah. What about any livestock? on the property?
Any livestock? Yeah, my wife, she's always wanted two pigs. So we actually got two pigs, miniature ones. Right. And we've got a few alpacas and a couple of horses as well. Mum and dad have got another around the corner as well. So we've got some horses on there as well. So it's, it's good, mate. Plenty of animals here to keep us busy.
We're very interested in the pigs' names, given you've only got two. What have you called them?
Well, it's a little bit embarrassing for me to say, but she's a big Harry Potter fan. So Dobby and Hagrid.
What sort of pigs are they?
They're miniature ones. So, I guess a coloured sort of, black and white one. And what's the other one? A bit like a orangey black sort of colour.
Does that mean you only get little pork chops out of those ones or not?
Yeah, if I sent that around, she'd probably kill me. They're purely just pet these on gas.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they're pets. And the alpaca, what's the alpaca's name?
Mate, I couldn't say. We bought them from the farm just to keep the grass down. They don't do a really good job, to be honest, but we might need to get a few more of them.
Do they spit? Do they spit it to the alpaca?
Boy, they're fearful spitters.
Yeah. Well, when you shear them, that's probably the worst spot to be near, and they spit all over the place and carry on. So they're interesting animals, but... they're just basically there as warm as for us at the moment.
And they'll keep the foxes away from your pigs.
Yeah, I reckon that's a complete lie. I ran out of there when it was sunny a couple of weeks ago, and one was laying down sunning itself next to a fox. I've heard that one that many times.
I'm shattered about that.
When you shear your alpaca, how many jumpers would you get out of one alpaca?
Oh, I'm not sure. The lady who we bought them off goes over to South America. Used to go over there and takes them all across there, gets the jumps and brings them back. But when you watch an actual alpaca get shorn, it's almost like they put them on a table and tie them down and they go nuts. So it's not like a sheep where they just grab it, ragdoll them and shear them. So it's a lot different.
Okay. And just one final question too. I've heard Daisy Pierce talk about that. You grew up alongside Daisy, is that right?
I did.
She said that she had your measure in junior football. Is that right?
Well, the funny thing is, Daisy's, she must not want to get away from me. She's actually just bought a house about 200 metres away across the road from me. So she's moved back up here as well and bought a bit of land across from me. She's only got the 5 acres, so.
Right.
But great view. But she probably did have your measure back then. She won the goal kicking, I think, probably 3 or 4 times in a row for her under 13. So she killed him.
She's a star. As are you, mate. We appreciate you jumping on. We loved your talk about the bucks and the pies. We loved your farming talk even more, to be honest. So we'll touch base again at some stage. Good on you, Benny.
Too easy, boys. Have a good one.
How you been?
Ben Reed here for Keezer. Struggling with back pain. Now's the time for Keezer. Now open in Mornington and Ocean Grove.
Dr. Jeff Edelston, after purchasing on Wednesday the Sydney Swans for more than $6 million. Naturally, he was in Melbourne today to see his side in action against Carlton at Princes Park, and Peter Donegan wasn't far behind him.
Well, Doctor, the big day's finally here after what must seem an eternity of waiting. How does it feel?
I'm very nervous and exhilarated and looking forward to it. I really hope we can knock Carlton off.
Well, there's a couple of points out of that. I wish you'd talk more like Peter Landy when you introduced Tom Brown.
I wish I could too.
On your sports report. Jeff Edelston sadly passed away age 78 in Melbourne on Friday. He was a huge name in football there for a period of time, took over as a private owner of the Sydney Swans and made them the hottest ticket in town. Tony Moorwood was a part of it and he's been good enough to join us. Okay, Tone.
Good morning, Gary, Tim.
Very nice to talk to you. What are your memories? We would have a whole audience listening here this morning. Some would be very well aware and know the story. Others wouldn't realise how big a story it was when Jeff Edelston took over as the private owner of the South Melbourne and then Sydney Swans Footy Club.
Well, it was quite significant because, obviously the relocation from South Melbourne to Sydney in those years of 82, 83, 84, 85, and then the unknown future of the club, where it was going to be, and the first, I suppose, dipping your toe into the water of private ownership, which was something that none of us knew what it was going to be like, how it was going to unfold. The VFL at the time were probably looking to follow the American way, private ownership in sport, but it was an adventure, absolutely an adventure. I mean, what it did do is that the Swans at the time had struggled to get media exposure in Sydney, and when Jeff, the doctor, came on board, was suddenly, that turned around, and suddenly being in eighth pages into the back of the paper, well, suddenly on the front and the back, and provided immediate exposure, which we had never been able to gain before.
Hey, Tony, just good morning to you, but just tell us about the bling and the excitement that he brought to the Sydney Swans back in the day.
Well, I think that there's two things. One, there was obviously excitement, and, you know, he was clearly a little bit out of left field in regard to what how he marketed himself, which was totally different in the his personal personality, which was really quite quiet and shy. But, you know, you have a helicopter, the Swanettes, all of that was important, certainly in regard to Sydney, because Sydney liked winners. But what was more important was the recruitment that he went on in bringing, obviously, Jared and Diesel, Tui, Bolton, Edmund, Neagle, and Merv. Merv and I were really good friends, and Merv was, as you know, Tim, was an outstanding player and one of the most important players that ever played for us at the Swans.
Why was he so important for you back then, Tony?
I just think that he provided a bit of flair in regard to the way he played, but he was just naturally tough and aggressive. And I just know that for me, I felt that whenever Merv was in there, we're always going to be competitive as a team. And obviously, the first couple of years, we were a very good team.
You talked about the Doc before, and you know, there was everything around him was sort of hyped up, and the pink helicopter, his lifestyle, the way that he dressed. But I bumped into him a couple of times. He was a very shy man, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He was extremely shy. And so, you know, we all have different personalities and what makes us tick. And certainly with Jeff, something happened because he was a very accomplished doctor. He was on the honour board for medical at hospitals and universities. So something else had took him down this path, whether it was his association with a guy called Pritchard, in the marketing, but you know, he just wanted to be seen to be up there, and I think I think that was the start of sport and football becoming entertainment. That's where that crossover really commenced, I think, with he coming into that phase. But one story in 1885, he'd just been announced as the owner, and so my contract was out at the time. And I know I got a phone call to come for dinner with Jeff and Leanne. So my wife and I go out for dinner at this restaurant in Sydney on the harbour. And we're reading the menus, and I can remember the entree was about the cost of a main course now, Tim. And I'm whispering to my wife, well, I hope we're not paying for this. And next thing you know, the bill comes at the end of the night, and he keeps on pulling out all this cash from every side of his jacket, and this pocket, and this pocket, and this pocket. And I'm thinking at the time, I've made the right call here. I'm gonna sign wherever.
Impressive. Hey, 86. I'm looking at this. The ladder. You finished second on the ladder. You've had 16 wins and 6 losses. And you lost the first final to Carlton, and then Fitzroy rolled you. And then in 87, you finished third. 15 wins and 7 losses and didn't win. I don't think you won a final there either. Which of those was your best chance, do you think?
I think 86, Gary. I mean, 86, we certainly would have made a grand final in 86, because what people won't remember, and people were too young, is that it wasn't a national competition, so we didn't get home ground advantage to play in Sydney. Mm. So all of the finals had to come to Melbourne.
Yeah, sure.
And also in the last home and away game of the year in 86, our centre half back was our captain, Dennis Carroll, did his knee. And so he went out. And so whilst we performed well in the two finals in Melbourne, we lost them both and we're out in straight sets. But that would have been the year that I actually could have seen us win it all. But that's where it is. And you know, the interstate advantages, interstate, having a home final was certainly an advantage, as it is and as it is playing at the MCG for every home game for all those home teams. It's an incredible home advantage.
Yeah, no, those stories get lost in the telling, don't they? That's a very good point. Just as we let you go, Tone, would it Sydney, South Melbourne / Sydney have survived if Jeff Edelston hadn't come along?
No. No. I mean, it was at the time I was young and now I fully understand the business model, the business case around it. Without the support of certainly the VFL at the time and the state government in regard to development and funding, it didn't have the membership base of just be able to survive and the cash flow to do that. So in the end, the club is in a really good space. It's still the one entity, and that's, I think, that the club has to be seen. And, you know, when they left South Melbourne in 1982, there was 3,800 members. And membership wasn't big in those days, but I know that the club has 50 to 60,000 and 12,500 in Melbourne. So, you know, I think it's, whilst it was a very tough time for a lot of people, I think it's been the right call.
Hey, Tony, we really appreciate your time this morning. I'd have to dispute one part about that, about them not surviving without Edelston, because our good mate Steve Talbot says that the Sydney Swans would not have survived had it not been for his contribution.
Well, Tim, Torbo and I are good friends, and you know that. I used to live around the corner from him. And so we know whatever Torbo says, you cut it in half, then divide by 50%, and then go another 25% off. Then you'll get the truth.
Hey, Tony, thanks so much. Great to hear your voice. Appreciate your time.
Okay. Good to see you, boys.
Thanks, Tony.
397 goals was a very, very good footballer. Very good footballer. God, he could play. But there's some perspective. No Sydney / South Melbourne without Jeff Edelston.
Unbelievable scenes there were when he arrived up there in Sydney, in the pink helicopter, the lifestyle, the dress, the flamboyancy that he brought, the fact that he had them on the front page, had them on the back page. Everybody was talking about him and his team, and Leanne and the Sydney Swans. It was an unbelievable time in football to be involved in the game.
Big show. His legacy there will live forever.